Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order. The time is now 1:33 and a half, March 30th, 2016. With me today, I've got Senator Ellis, Senator Stoltz, and myself. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have three pieces of labor to do in front of us. There are three bills. First one, Senate Bill 113, New Drugs for the Terminally Ill. Second one up will be Senate Bill 156, Insurance Coverage for Contraceptives, and then we'll have a first hearing on Senate Bill 179, Ban Late-Term Abortion, Child Surrender. First up, Senate Bill 113, An Act Relating to Prescribing, Dispensing, and Administering an Investigational Drug, Biological Product, or Device by Physicians or Patients who are terminally ill, and Providing Immunity for Persons Manufacturing, Distributing, or Providing Investigational Drugs, Biological Products, or Devices. Senate Bill 113 was previously heard on the 24th of February, 2016. The bill before the committee is Version H. Senator Wilkowski has joined us with his trusty staff. If he could, because it's been a while since February 24th, if he could give us a brief synopsis of the bill. We have been working this bill, and then we'll come back to the committee and see what the committee's desires are. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm State Senator representing East Anchorage and J-Bear, and with me is Brooke Ivy from my office. And appreciate the opportunity to come before you. I will be very brief. This is known as the Right to Try Bill. It's a bill that would create a legal climate in which terminally ill patients who have exhausted all FDA-approved treatment options may work with their doctors and drug manufacturers to access investigational treatments that have passed Phase 1 of the FDA approval process but are not yet widely available. This bill has been passed. A similar bill has been passed in now 25 states since we last met. In February, Idaho has passed it, and it's sitting on the governor's desk in the state of Georgia. So it is estimated that over 1 million Americans die from terminal illness, Mr. Chairman. And for those who have exhausted all FDA-approved options, clinical trials become the next step. However, it's extremely difficult to get access to these drugs, and only about 3% are accepted to use these clinically, these drugs that are in Phase 1 of the FDA approval process. So I'm happy to answer any questions, and appreciate the committee's opportunity to present this. Thank you.
We have any questions for the on the bill on the committee member?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stoltz.
I'll just state, just range for me from
from
February 24th. I had several questions. They were all adequately answered. I appreciated that, and there's been follow-up with my office, so.
Okay. Senator Ellis, we have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the bill be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and any accompanying supportive documents.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll move the bill from committee to the next committee referral. Next up, Senate Bill 156, An Act Relating to Insurance Coverage for Contraceptives and Relating Services. Relating to medical assistance, coverage for contraceptives and related services, and providing for an effective date. Senate Bill 156 was previously heard on the, February 24th, 2016. We have a new CS, Version N, and can we have a motion to adopt Version N?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion to adopt Version N as our working document. I will object for explanations, and if we could have the bill sponsor please review Version N.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Bertie Gardner from Midtown Anchorage, and with me is my very reliable trusty aide, Katie Bergerman, and she'll describe the changes to the bill.
Thank you, Chairman Stedman and committee members. During the last hearing on February 24th, we did address the fact that there were a few errors in the bill, and we have worked with Hess and other stakeholders to rectify those errors, and it basically consists of removal of the term over-the-counter contraception from, it's listed a few times, page 1, lines 11 and 12, Page 2, lines 18 and 19, and page 3, lines 18 and 19 of version W, which was the previous version. So the result of that, those changes, it ended up removing the fiscal note that was attached by Hess for the cost of $1.3 million in the first year.
I'll go ahead and remove my objection for the adoption of version N. Do we have any further objection to the adoption of version N? Seeing none, we have version N adopted as our working document, and Senator Gardner, would you please take us through the bill, kind of as a refresher, because it's been a while, and so the public can kind of follow along?
And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have my staff do that.
That's fine.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Senator Sedman, we so this bill basically is an insurance mandate to offer the option of providing 12 months of self-administered hormonal contraception. In the bill, there are different areas that describe that. But basically, the point of the bill is to allow Alaskan women the opportunity to receive a larger supply of contraception should their lifestyle and their choice require it. It's not a mandate, it's an option. So we had some questions from people during the last hearing that was that discussed that. We have recently gotten information from Hess that there is a negative fiscal note now. It's $1.2 million in fiscal year 2017, and this is $1 million federal savings and a $230,000 in general fund savings. And this is basically through the Medicaid program. There are lots of different reasons why women take hormonal contraception. Not all of them are to prevent pregnancy. Annually in the U.S., more than 700,000 women take contraception, are not even sexually active. They do it because they're trying to treat other symptoms or ailments that are rectified by the contraception. We feel that this is great policy for the state of Alaska because we have such a premium in helping women achieve their educational and career goals through strategic family planning, as women are becoming increasingly more important in contributing to their family income. We feel that this is a positive step towards that, reaching that goal. It fosters the right to privacy and the relationship of trust between a woman and her health care provider. And it also aids in convenience, making 12 separate trips to the pharmacy every single year for some women just isn't feasible. And one of the biggest reasons why hormonal contraception fails is because people run out of their supply because they're unable to get to a pharmacy for various reasons. In Alaska, we see women that live in rural areas, women that have privacy concerns because they're from such a small community that they might want to keep this choice private. Sometimes lack of transportation, etc. So we feel that this is a great time to move this bill forward, and the fiscal savings sure help do that too.
Thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I might add, this isn't a new benefit. The insurance coverage for contraceptive is not new. All we're doing is saying that after a three-month period, if the doctor deems it necessary to assure themselves that the woman can use it without contraindications, that they can then, if they choose, ask for a 12-month supply and get it. They still have to pay any co-pays. It's just good policy. And the in other states, there's evidence that the insurance companies are able to negotiate discounts when they get them in bulk that way.
Okay. We have any additional questions from committee members? Any other concerns? We've been working on this bill also. Senator Ellis, we have a motion to move to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 156 be reported from committee with individual recommendations and the fiscal note that documents savings to the state.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll move the bill from committee to the next committee referral.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next up. An act prohibiting abortions when an unborn child is viable outside the pregnant woman's womb with certain exceptions, providing that an infant removed from a pregnant woman's womb alive after an abortion may be surrendered and found to be a child in need of aid, and repealing a prohibition against partial birth abortions. This is Senator Coghill's staff. Ms. Moss, come forward, please, or Senator Coghill is here also in person. If they could tell the committee what we This is the first hearing. What we have in front of us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this bill. Mr. Chairman, I'll go to what the bill does, some of the rationale for it, and then I have another committee that I'll probably have to duck out to and remain questions for my chief of staff, Reneva.
Sure, that's fine.
At this point, Mr. Chairman, this particular bill does exactly what the title says, that if a baby is found to be viable and a mother requests an abortion, that under the doctor's judgment, if that baby is viable, that the baby then at that point would be delivered and given up as a child in need of aid. The viability is a new concept in our law, but it's not a new concept. It's actually been a discussion ever since Roe versus Wade, when this the question of abortion arose. The other thing that this bill does also is it repeals the partial birth abortion ban that was found unconstitutional and has been permanently enjoined in our law. The U.S. Supreme Court did overturn many of the partial birth abortion bans, but we would have to reinstitute it, and it was my intent to do that when I began to looking through this. Then I realized that viability was really the question at this point, and so this would instruct a doctor to do the abortion, but also take notice of the viability of the baby. It's in the doctor's discretion. The mother still has a choice to keep it, yay or nay. If the mother chooses not to, then it would be considered a child in need of aid. So viability becomes the big question. And what I did was, under tab three, of your packet, I went through the viability question. And I just wanted to show you that in the United States, we're one of only seven countries of the 198 countries analyzed that permit elective abortions past 20 weeks. And so this study puts the U.S. in the top 5% of the most permissive countries, and that's the study for that is in tab 6. If you look in the next page over where the picture of the United States, and unfortunately Alaska is at the bottom left again, but it shows that states that have no ban on abortions, late term or otherwise, and so Alaska, Colorado, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, there are many that have third trimester bans, some that have 24 weeks, and some viability. And so what we've done is we've gone to the states that had viability, we looked at the Supreme Court precedent for it, and followed it through. So there are some studies in here that I think you'll find helpful. Also, on the page that has abortion bans before viability, it just shows you nationally and internationally where people have thought about the viability of a fetus from 12 weeks all the way to 24, and where America generally fits in between 20 and 22 weeks for the most part. Also, survival rate. This is based on studies that you'll see once again in the packet, I think starting under tab 6, if I remember correctly. The survival rate from 23 weeks and beyond, it gets better and better and better, starting at 25% at 23 weeks, all the way up to 100% at 31 weeks. The next page just shows a Gallup poll that shows that 80% say that in these last months of pregnancy, that baby should be treated, or the fetus should be treated viably. So what you have is a picture of a baby at 27 weeks there. But I thought I'd just talk a little bit about Roe versus Wade. So the Supreme Court maintained that the state has an interest in protecting the life of the fetus after viability, that is, after the point at which the fetus is capable of living outside the womb. And so if you turn to the next page, it says Roe versus Wade, 410 U.S. 113, dated 1973. It says, with respect to the state's important and legitimate interest in potential life, the compelling point is at viability. This is so because the fetus then presumably has the capability of meaningful life outside the mother's womb. So the state regulation protective of fetal life after viability thus has both logical and biological justifications. So the state is interested in protecting fetal life after viability. It may go so far as to prescribe abortion during that period, except when it is necessary to preserve the life and health of the mother, which in this particular bill we have done. That is one of the areas that we followed suit with other court cases, basically. So if you go to Planned Parent versus Central Missouri's and Danforth, this is 1976, once again upheld that in Roe we use the term viable properly. We thought to signify the point at which the fetus is potentially able to live outside the mother's womb, albeit with artificial aid, and presumably capable of meaningful life outside the mother's womb. And what you have here is a picture of a 21-week baby, if you turn to that page. And my apologies, I didn't number the pages, my apologies. Planned Parenthood versus Southeastern Pennsylvania in the Casey case. This is in 1992. Once again, the recognition of the right of a woman to choose, there's no doubt. The confirmation of the state's power to restrict abortions is upheld after viability. And the principle in the third one is that the state has a legitimate interest from the outset of the pregnancy in protecting the health of the woman and the life of the fetus. And so what we've done here is tried to figure out how to best do that. Some places put viability at a specific time during the pregnancy. What we did was, in this bill, we gave it to the doctor's judgment. That's true in many, many states. And what you have here I think it's on the second to last page, the Gonzalez versus Carhart. I'll just read this for those listening in. The court upholds the federal law restricting partial birth abortion. Under the principles accepted as controlling here, the act as we have interpreted it would be unconstitutional if its purpose or effect is to place a substantial obstacle in the path of a woman seeking an abortion before the fetus attains viability. And so the debate for years and years and years has been that, and I've done some searching long and hard trying to figure out how do we maintain the woman's right and take care of those young ones who really are viable, they could live. The last page, if you see, I have pictures of older people, and you might ask, why older people? Because we value life so highly in Alaska that we have gone to extraordinary lengths to help them live long and healthy lives, and sometimes on extended care, with whether it's oxygen or wheelchairs. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think the viability is the big question, and I think we've got court precedent to show that that's the case. The thing that we do in this is repeal our late-term partial birth abortion language, and we put in here on page 2, lines 11, it's sub 6 of that section, the place where the judgment of the doctor is leaned upon heavily in the clinical judgment of the physician performing or inducing the abortion. The unborn child is not viable outside the pregnant woman's womb at the time the abortion is performed. If you look at the operative language in there, that's on page 1, except for provided in K of the section, abortion may only be performed or induced in this state if, in the clinical judgment of the physician performing or inducing the abortion, the unborn child is not viable outside the pregnant woman's womb at the time the abortion is performed. It allows also for the state to take charge of its compelling interest by declaring that there's a child in need of aid, and the state then takes custody of the child and puts it in the position where adoption would be probably the most beneficial means possible. That's basically the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to take a few minutes and answer questions if you wish. Otherwise, I will... I'll go to my next committee and let Reneva Moss field questions.
Do we have any Senator Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Coghill, thanks for being with us today. And in your presentation, you mentioned viability, and then you used the phrase meaningful life. Is that a term of art, or what does that mean, meaningful life? Because you use that as the adjective.
That would be my assessment. Not the legal assessment. And so the legal assessment would be viability. And so my assessment is meaningful life. And that's really the very difference. So when we get into the court cases, what we have to look at is what do they mean by viability? And you'll see that we put in here a definition that I think will be both tested in courts throughout the United States. And I think we probably have landed on the doctor's integrity to help settle that. So the choice was my words.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Do you have one concern from the Ledge Legal? Do you want to address that at all or mention that or while we're here?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. I called legal to see if there was a legal opinion that I had missed, and they told me that there wasn't a legal opinion for this version of the bill.
Okay.
With that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Stoltz.
Well, I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just I'm really glad within the bill it refers to unborn child. Your testimony was littered with the term fetus, and I thought you were kind of slipping more soft and moderate here. But I think all the statutory language you're suggesting reflects, I think, your values more accurately than your testimony may have.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Stoltz, fetus means baby, and I use them interchangeably.
But others, Mr. Chairman, others use it as a convenient thing to make it less tangible and less, something detached. So, again.
I understood.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any final comments? We're going to, before we set it aside in time, final comments for the bill sponsor while you're here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the privilege of speaking to it. Mr. Chairman, this has been hotly debated down through the years. I think that this is time for us to really take notice of a baby that can survive an unwanted pregnancy, basically. And an abortion can be performed and still have a live birth. In this particular case, viability becomes the question. And I think that's important for Alaska. We value life very highly here in Alaska. This is a move in the right direction. Certainly for me, I would go even further. But this is a matter of law, and we have to argue under the auspices of the law of our land, which is the U.S. Constitution and the way it's been interpreted in Roe versus Wade and beyond. And so this helps us get to, I think, the best respect for life, both for the woman who is the child bearer and the child who may not be wanted. So I appreciate the time to express that in front of you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Any other final, Senator Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I do have a question for either the sponsor or staff about the child in need of aid petition. Who files that? I mean, is this is a burden on the state or a responsibility of the state to file those? And how would that whole procedure work under this bill?
Senator Ellis, in the bill you notice that the child, if either parent doesn't want the child would be turned over to the physician or a health practitioner or health aide that is at the medical procedure. They will notify OCS, and OCS walks into the picture. They take custody of the child.
So, Mr. Chairman, the doctor notifies the Office of Children's Services.
Correct.
And then OCS would file a petition to designate the child as a child in need of aid.
Through the chair, that's correct, Senator Ellis.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for now. This concludes the meeting today. We have no meeting scheduled for Friday. This meeting is adjourned.